Accession number 18090, Reel 4.
At least 12 submarines, and then there was quite a few destroyers.
Did you spend your time doing? Exercising, or...?
We spent our time enjoying ourselves. We used to go out and... the cruisers used to go out and do shoots, and we used to go out and carry out dummy attacks on the cruisers and that sort of thing. But it was... it was such a big fleet.
And your area of operations, I mean, you would go down to Singapore and up to Japan, would you, or Korea?
We didn't go to the Korea. We went to the Philippines. We certainly went to North China, from where I went up to Peking and the Great Wall of China. We got around, and we were able to, you see. Walked along the Great Wall of China, and we went to Japan, and... No, I don't think we went down to Singapore. The ships used to go down there to dock, but not the whole fleet. And then we had typhoons. We rode out a typhoon in Otis. They're very good things for typhoon submarines because there's not much above the water.
What about discipline? I mean, the men were out there for perhaps 5 years at a stretch. There wasn't an awful lot to do. Did they get up to much mischief or not?
Well, there was plenty of life in them. In Hong Kong, it was when we were away, they were all short of anything to do. But they enjoyed Hong Kong, and they had this big canteen and lots of I should say brothels, whatever you like to call them. No, I think the sailors all enjoyed it.
And you were actually on Hong Kong Island, were you? You mentioned earlier on polo playing and the race course and so on. I mean, was the naval base actually on the island itself?
Oh, yes, very much so, yes. Mm. Yes, Kowloon, which was on the other side, was largely shipbuilding. And there wasn't much of it, actually. We had a golf course. And
there was a club there, wasn't there?
Oh yes, very good club. Yes. Oh, it's a time I've really enjoyed playing golf because there was a bar at the ninth hole, I think.
Yes, but there's also a sort of general club, I believe.
Oh, the Hong Kong Club. I beg your pardon. That's on the island.
Yes.
Oh yes, very posh, very posh.
I got taken there when I was out there in 1980. It was still operating.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's still there now.
No, I shouldn't think so. Yes, it was very exclusive. They had tennis courts and that sort of thing.
Did you mix socially much with the colonial officials and business people there?
Quite a bit, yes. Yes. Yes, I used to do a bit of race riding. And these big taipans, as they were called, owned, you know, good horses, and I used to ride their horses for them. I was trying to think of the names of the people. I can't remember.
And I suppose there are no high-rise buildings in those days, that they were all bungalow types, were they?
There was one high-rise building, and that was in Anyhow, it had air conditioning. It was the only place in the colony that had air conditioning. And you used to go in there to get cool.
Was that the bank?
Yes, I think it was the bank. That's right. The bank building. I think that was the very first high-rise building to be put up.
Yeah.
That's right.
Was life in submarines uncomfortable in the heat? Did you suffer from heat a lot?
Yes, it was very uncomfortable. We had what they called dehumidifiers, but they didn't seem to make a lot of difference.
Presumably, I mean, you had extra income, did you? I mean, you didn't sail home only on your naval pay. You said you put, £500 down each?
Yes, that didn't come out of one's pay, no. Yeah. My kind father, I think, put up that.
Because I think the general rate of naval pay at that time meant that you had to think twice about getting married until you reached a certain rank and achieved a certain rank.
Yes, I suppose it was so, yes. But in submarines, I think we got 6 bob a day extra, which was a lot of money in those days compared with them. A gunnery officer or something like that. 6 bob a day, when you were a lieutenant or sub-lieutenant, it was a lot of money. I've forgotten what a sub-lieutenant's pay was, but it wasn't very much. You had 6 bob onto it, it was, you know, it might have been 25% more, that sort of thing.
I've heard it said that one of the mainstays and most important figures in a submarine crew is the coxswain. Is that?
Well, he is the master of arms, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Oh yes, he is in charge of all the
He's like the sergeant major in the army.
That's right. Yes, I mean if there's a defaulter,
yeah,
he brings him up in front of the first lieutenant or whoever it is. But I wouldn't say he's the most important person. The most important person, I think, was the outside ERA, because he was in charge of all the machinery in the submarine, except for the torpedoes and the engine room. You had a chief ERA, or an engineer officer, if you were lucky, who was in charge of the engines. But the chief ERA, the outside ERA, was in charge of all the airlines and things. If you got a leak, it was his job to... And it was pretty serious if you did get a leak, because it built up enormous pressure. But, oh, the coxswain was... He was the master at arms, or the sergeant major, whatever you like to call it. I used to see quite a lot of the protest ones. They used to come and see me. But now I think they're all like me, mostly. Yes, they're mostly younger than me, but a lot of them have died or can't get about.
Quite well, what you can remember. You knew Tony Myers.
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, we used to have great fun with him. I remember him getting married. He was married in Western Australia. In fact, his wife, Joan, is dead, and I've seen her fairly recently. They both came to see me, about a year ago.
Do they live around here, or...?
No, they live at Roehampton.
What are your memories of Wanklyn?
He was a star. He was a star. He was very quiet, and you wouldn't have known he was such a great man. And he was the best submariner, really, we've had. And he was lucky in that he had plenty of targets, but he was a very good shot to start with, which is very important. I was quite a good shot, because the number of torpedoes I fired was about 60 or something. My average number of hits, I think I was number two to... they didn't record if she wanked anything because he was lost. But Geordie Hunt, does that mean anything to you?
I've heard the name.
He was my first lieutenant, and he now lives in Australia. But he was a very good shot. I always told him that I taught him how to shoot, and he had a higher percentage than I did. But I think I was number two.
What makes you a good shot?
I don't know. I think it's judge of distance, I think. Mark, you've got to have good torpedoes to go straight. I don't know.
I mean, there are so many factors. You've got tide, you've got very limited sighting ability sometimes on the targets, haven't you?
Well, that's the thing. Bad or... Yes, but the tide doesn't come into it.
No.
No, I don't know. There were several ways of firing torpedoes. One was by timing them, you know, at 5 second intervals, and or whatever it was, 10 second intervals. But I always preferred to aim each shot. I mean, if you fire three torpedoes at a ship, you would fire the first one slightly ahead, aiming it slightly ahead, you'd fire the second one slap in the middle and the third one slightly astern, so that if the ship was going a bit faster or a bit slower, one of them would hit her. I was lucky, I had stern tubes. And stern tubes are very useful things, and because if the ship zigzags straight at you, you couldn't fire your bow tubes, because you'd be too close. Whereas if you steam away from the ship, you can fire your stern tubes as she goes by. And I had two stern tubes, and I think I only fired about 10 from my stern tubes, and I think 8 of them hit, because we were always at close range. But no, I don't know what makes a good shot, but I'm sure that aiming them, if you could, which relied on keeping your periscope up all the time, which might be a bit tricky, but you had to be careful. No, I don't know.
What other great names? Did you know Ben Bryant?
Yes, he was my captain. He was a great chap, Ben, but there again, Ben was a very bad shot with a torpedo, but he was brilliant with his gun. I had a gun, but I didn't like using my gun. I thought my job was to stay underwater and remain undetected. But Ben used to... He was a very brave chap, Ben, and he used to come up and take on almost anything with his gun, and got away with it, too. Oh, he was great, Ben Brand. And he was the only chap who was, I think, a captain in command of a submarine.
Really?
Yes, I knew them all. Well, I suppose one knew all the COs of all the submarines pretty well, particularly the ones that are in the Mediterranean. But Ben Bryant was my captain.
Which sort of boat was that in?
Oh, it wasn't in the submarine. No, he was captain of the depot ship when we were out in Australia after the war.
Uh-huh.
We had a wonderful time after the war. I mean, we had this enormous navy and nobody knew what to do with it. And, what was it? Not the Medway, the...
Time?
No. More modern than that. The new submarine dive ship. Anyhow, we had a wonderful cruise. I joined her. I was commander of SM, that's number two, in the dive ship. I joined her at Perth, and that's where Tony Mars, got married to this Australian girl. Pat was an Australian. And when he was in the Mediterranean, they interviewed him. He won his VC out there in the Mediterranean. And when he was one of the press who were interviewing him said, "Are you married?" And he stood on his hind legs and said, "I'm married to the White Ensign." And of course, we all heard this. And when he did get married, we had a special silk White Ensign made into a nightdress. You've probably heard all this before. And we gave it to Pat as a wedding present. And when Pat was here the other day, I said to him, "Now, just as a matter of interest, did you really wear that nightdress?" And she said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I did, but for not very long, because it didn't fit very well." Well, there you are. But no, when we were, I wish I could remember the name of the depot ship, we had all the submarines, lots of them.
To think of the names of the Adamant was one.
Adamant, that's it. Adamant, I think. Yes, Adamant. And we started from Perth. We went along the south coast of Australia. We went to Adelaide and to all these places.
This was when, in the late 40s, after the war?
This is just after the war. The war is just over. And here we've got a whole navy, and nobody knows what to do with it.
Yeah.
It must have been the same at home. But we then went to Adelaide and Melbourne and Sydney. Who was the governor? He was a member of the royal family. I can't remember. Anyhow, we had a marvellous time. We were fated wherever we went. And then we went to New Zealand, and we went to Wellington and all the places you should go to, I can't remember what they all are. We then went to Fiji, and from Fiji we went to the Solomon Islands, and from the Solomon Islands we went up to... where did we go, John? I'm sure we went somewhere else out there. Oh, yes, we went to Tonga. Do you remember the...
the whole fleet?
No, this was just the submarines.
Oh.
The Adamant and her chickens.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And sometimes we sent individual submarines to other places. And, yes, we went to Tonga because the Queen of Tonga was very big, wasn't she?
Queen Saluti, yeah.
Queen Saluti, that's right, yes. And...
when did you actually leave the Navy?
1958.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a long time ago.
And how did you end up?
Oh, I wasn't any good in peacetime. I'm no good at paperwork. Yeah. I was bottom of my term at Dartmouth, and anyhow, everything was so flat. I mean, I was at the Admiralty in D&E, and we spent our whole time paying off ships and producing reasons why we shouldn't go on building other ships. And Admiralty papers rather beat me. We had some people in my office who were frightfully good at it, and whereas I couldn't compete. And
were you involved in the nuclear submarine program at all?
No, I don't think that. No, I don't think that. I don't think they were going in those days, and we thought of them.
Dreadnought was commissioned, I think, in about 1960, wasn't it?
Yes, but I mean, I left before that. You see. Yes, no, I wasn't involved in any of that. No, I was no good, and they chucked me out as a commander. I was quite pleased to go. You know, when you've gone through the war, everything's a bit flat. And the Navy, ever since I joined it, has been getting smaller and smaller.
Did you know Geoffrey Jakes on your Australian trip? He was in one of the T-boats.
I know the name. No, I can't visualise him.
I interviewed him recently.
Oh, yes, yes. Did I tell you who you ought to interview? And that's, perhaps you have done. He's an admiral. Very nice chap. I think he's still alive. He's a lot younger than me. McIntosh. Ian McIntosh.
I think he has been interviewed, actually.
Because he's got a most interesting account, largely, of when he was torpedoed. His ship was torpedoed, and they had a boat trip across the Atlantic or something.
Where does he live now, do you know?
I think he lives in Portsmouth. I saw him the other day. Oh. We had a get-together of all those people who were in diesel-driven submarines. It just shows you, because ours were diesel-driven. You've had enough now.